Welcome to another week of Truth Jihad Radio, right here on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett. I do this show every weekend, same time, same channel, 2 to 4 p.m. Central on WTPRN.com, the voice of free speech radio, the best collection of activists on the air that you'll ever find in one place. Today, I have two very super special guests lined up, people who have opened doors to areas of knowledge that are desperately needed and yet very, very little known. My first hour guest is Paul Levy, the author of The Madness of George W. Bush. Paul Levy is I don't have my notes in front of me at all today, so I'm going to have to wing it, and he'll probably correct me. but he's a kind of a Jungian-based therapist, counselor, writer who has understood metaphysically that there is a relationship between the microcosm and the macrocosm, and that in the case of the madness of George W. Bush, that madness doesn't just stem from one guy who's pretty messed up, but from all of us being messed up. He's a reflection of our own troubled psyches. Now, that may sound a little strange at first. It's not necessarily the Cartesian Western tradition to look at things this way, but I think Paul has a very strong argument to make here, and he's a very eloquent voice. We'll be bringing him on in just a moment. Second hour guest is David Ray Griffin, the Dean of 9/11 Studies. David Ray Griffin has written, I don't have my notes in front of me, but I think it's about six books on 9/11, starting with the New Pearl Harbor, and at this point, ending, at least as of now, with his most recent book, which has just been published, or is right on the edge of being published. I don't have it in my hands yet, but it's out there, folks. It's getting there. You'll have it in your hands soon. It's called The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. And we'll be talking about that book and about David Ray Griffin's other work, including his recently published article, Were Muslims Involved in 9/11? Again, I'm winging it. I have no notes, no computer, no nothing today. So if I get something a little bit off, please forgive me. I think Paul Levy and David Ray Griffin are probably as powerful a 1-2 punch of guests as I could ever find. Both are able to make that connection between the spiritual and the political, which is very relevant to me right now. It's Ramadan. I'm fasting. I'm trying to keep the spiritual dimension of things in view, despite being overwhelmed by the political as I run for Congress here in Wisconsin's 4th District after just winning my primary on Tuesday. I'm now in the general election as a Libertarian candidate against neocon theocrat Paul Stark and the Democratic incumbent, pro-war, burn-the-Constitution candidate Ron Kind. I'm trying to get a little bit of spiritual in there with my political, and who better than Paul Levy and David Ray Griffin? Well, I can't see my screen here, but I'm assuming that we may have gotten in touch with Paul Levy. So let's go ahead and introduce Paul Levy as one of the most interesting thinkers of our time. Paul, are you there?
Hi.
All right. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you back. You know, your work, like David Ray Griffin, is a very hard, unflinching look at the horrific political, social reality that we've found ourselves trapped in. Mm-hmm. And like David Ray Griffin, you're informed by a kind of a deeper spiritual worldview that makes sense of this political malaise, or should I say a political disease, because it really qualifies. What path led you to seeing things with this sort of double perspective?
Well, I'm a head of a Tibetan Buddhist center, And so I've been doing real serious Tibetan Buddhist practice for 25 years. And just doing my own personal work and really studying, you know, the work of the psychiatrist Carl Jung, who is just, you know, if I hadn't found his work, I don't know if I would have had a context for the deeper spiritual experiences that I began having, you know, 25 years ago. And, you know, the thing I should say, though, is that I was not interested in politics until George W. Bush became president. And he so triggered something in me, really disturbing, that, you know, I just went into what was that in me that was being touched, that was getting so, you know, activated by this figure, by Bush.
It's not just you, Paul. A lot of people have noticed that this is like a national nightmare. This character, you know, comes in on a
right.
election and, you know, just, you know, turns out to be our worst nightmare image of the bad.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
President. Yeah.
Right, and the thing, and you know, if I can, the thing that I actually, you know, got to was that, this is a sort of a nightmare in the sense that, you know, any of the wisdom traditions talk about that we're having this mass shared dream. And when you contemplate our situation from that point of view, you actually see, well, who is Bush? But he's a dream character. We've all, in a sense, dreamed him up into materialization to embody this really mad, this ignorant part of ourselves. And from that point of view, he's not separate from any of us. And that was the context. That was the sort of the point of view that I wrote my book from, you know, sort of seeing the political, like the body politic and what was playing out from the point of view of the underlying field. So not from the point of view of the separate self that viewed Bush or any of us as existing as a separate person, separate from the field that they were an emanation of, but I was having the realization, wow, there's actually something deeper that's explicating itself, that's unfolding into the third dimension, and it's actually this reflection of a process that's going on within ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, so that was really, you know, the place that I wrote the book out of, and I had the realization, wow, there's an actual, it's what I call the psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that's like not, you know, that's actually in the soul of all of our species and is unfolding, you know, throughout the entire field of consciousness, and that something is being shown to us through what's playing out, and it's an inner disease of the soul that's actually expressing itself through the medium of the outside world.
And so we've all got a little George W. Bush inside us, which is, that's even more frightening than having this guy as president with his finger on a nuclear button, you know, blowing up the World Trade
right.
Center to get us into war, having a little Bush inside of us. Oh, my goodness.
Totally, totally.
You know, wake me up, somebody, please.
Right. Well, the thing is that, you know, if he wasn't triggering us, I mean, the whole idea of when we have a projection, if we have like this like reaction when we see the projected content out there, that reaction is an indication that it's something in us that's being touched. So to the extent that, you know, any of us have, you know, get triggered by Bush, that's showing, that's pointing to that there's something inside of us that's actually being, you know, that's actually being touched. You know,
yeah. You know, for me, I find that, you know, Bush is supremely creepy, but Cheney is just as creepy. They're like, you know, it's like Frankenstein meets the Wolfman or something. It's like,
oh, totally,
scarier.
totally. And the thing is, so what I've done with my work, I actually, you know, it's important, like, you know, to find the name of things, because just like when you think about, like, with mythology, when you find the name of something, that actually takes away the power of like the negative force when you find its name, because to find its name is to know its nature. And so once I saw, wow, there's like a deeper process that's unfolding through Bush and through, you know, the greater body politic and through all of us, we're all playing these different roles in it. Then I had the realization, wow, I have to find a name for this. And what I came up with was the name malignant egophrenia. Or like ME disease, me disease. And it's different than when somebody has like what's called, you know, like say with schizophrenia, where all the parts of the psyche are sort of disassociated from each other. with egophrenia, what it is that this pathological core in the psyche, like, has co-opted all of the other parts of the psyche into its service. So the person can appear, you know, to be like this normal person or whatever, but actually they're embodying, they're incarnating this real, this pathology. And as a result of that, they can have, like, this certain charisma because they've been possessed in a way by the unconscious, by an archetype of the collective unconscious. And when that happens, a certain, like, a certain energy gets transduced, you know, through them that actually has an effect on people's unconscious. So, you know, it's important when you understand Bush and the whole phenomena that has kind of come out, you know, just all the people supporting him, it can only be understood when you understand that there's actually a collective process going on that's involving the unconscious of our species, and that's actually articulating itself through the greater field of the macrocosmic of the body politic, you know. So that's what I really go into in my book.
And that's it's a wonderful book. And I ties in with the wisdom traditions that all say that the ego is something that has to be gotten past. This tendency to identify with one little part of ourselves rather than the whole constellation of ourselves and the rest of life around us is falling into one small little ego with a hard shell, this me kind of thing. And you certainly do see that with Bush, and all you see it around. And you know, the U.S. Is a nation that's founded on individualism and people going out and trying to accomplish things and grab things for themselves and make something of themselves. And there is kind of a me consciousness in this country, isn't there?
Oh, totally. And that's why with the malignant egophrenia, the short, you know, it's like me disease, because, you know, the actual source of the pathology is that clinging to the sense that we exist in a way as an isolated entity that actually we don't exist as. And so, but that clinging and you know, sort of it'll explicate itself over the dimensions to the point where that's the root of like the evil that's playing out, you know, in the field. And, you know, but what I'm pointing out about this disease is that it's actually showing us something about ourselves. And when you actually see this deeper process, you know, how this malignant egophrenia is actually playing out in the field, what it does, it actually really shows you, oh, wow, we don't exist as separate beings from each other, but we're all interconnected. We're all interdependent. And from that point of view, that's the, in a sense, that's the expansion of consciousness, where we actually, like snapping out of a spell, we step out of the imagination that we exist in a way that we don't as an isolated ego.
Well, that sounds a bit like the vision of reality that Simone Weil talked about. I was reading her writings recently, and she discussed how the great mystics have seen this view of things, which is kind of a God's eye view, the beauty of creation as it would look if you're not attached to your own particular position in it. Just there's just the whole thing, and that, you know, when people can actually directly perceive that, they're often really overwhelmed with joy. As being stuck in an ego is a kind of an affliction.
Right, and it's a fear-based, totally.
Jesus had to suffer affliction. This is something that everybody has to go through, I guess, on the way to seeing the big picture.
Right, and the thing that's important to understand is how the disease, how it actually kind of, you know, the whole, like, sort of the process of how it propagates itself. Because, say, for example, with Bush, like, it's obvious to you and to me and to so many other people. I mean, for 8 years, it's been obvious that, you know, he's really, you know, he's very sick, you know, that he's ignorant, he's crazy, and just, you know, it couldn't be more obvious to so many people. But the thing which is interesting is that, you know, there are these millions of people in our country who don't see that. And by actually, you know, being taken in by his, what you know, and it's all based on fear, he'll hook people through their fear. And if people don't see that he's crazy and actually support him and follow him, they become unwittingly the agents through which the non-local disease, malignant egophrenia, actually replicates itself through them.
Like a science fiction movie, Paul.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is. It's totally, but that's what a collective psychosis is. And it's really important, you know, just to understand that we're in the midst of a collective psychosis. And it's the greatest danger that is facing our species is to fall into a psychic epidemic where we just, you know, create wars. And if you take a look at what we're doing, we're destroying the biosphere, which is the life support system of the planet. So if people say to me, well, what makes you think that we're having a collective psychosis? I just say to them, what makes you think we're not? You know, I mean, the evidence is all around us. You know, and it's in, you know, and it's so pervasive, the collective psychosis, that people aren't even talking about it, which itself is an expression of how pervasive and, you know, the psychic epidemic actually is.
Yeah, sometimes I do sort of feel like I'm living in a remake of the Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
No, exactly, Kevin. Totally, I know. Right. It's so much like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, So the thing is that I just want to point out that the origin of this psychospiritual, like the pathology, malignant ophrenia, is in the human psyche. And that, you know, one way to understand this is just contemplating somebody like Bush who's taken over by it. Like, he's the revelation of the disease in form. And what I mean is, like, if you just contemplate what he's doing, he's so split off from his own shadow that he just projects it outside of himself onto, you know, whether it be the terrorists or the Democrats or what. Yeah, and then he tries to destroy his own projected shadow out there. But by doing that, he actually becomes possessed by the very darkness that he's trying to destroy. And that's the psychological, like, process that's actually playing out.
And we have to watch out for getting caught up in that. When we demonize Bush, as we must, to look at him honestly, we have to watch out, or we'll end up projecting him as being outside of us and going into that same crusading mode.
Right, totally.
I plead guilty to having done that a little bit. This is Kevin Barrett, and I'm talking with a wiser man than I, Paul Levy. We'll be back in a moment.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is Kevin Barrett. You're listening to We the People Radio Network. And I am interviewing Paul Levy today. He is the author of The Madness of George W. Bush, a book which brilliantly brings together the spiritual with the political from a kind of a Jungian perspective, seeing George W. Bush as an incarnation of our own shadow, a kind of a nightmare figure that we're all projecting on the screen of reality. And, speaking of come together, we will be coming together. Paul Levy and David Ray Griffin will be coming together on this show as the politics and the spirituality come together. And we'll also, we're going to be moving on a little bit to talk about what comes after Bush. Because, Paul, last time I spoke to you, we were still sort of in that period where there was really no light at all at the end of the tunnel. Like, would we ever get out of this Bush phase? It didn't seem very likely anytime soon. But now we have at least theoretical possibility that there won't be another 9/11 before the election, and there'll be an election, and then somebody new will come into office. And, you know, Paul, if you look at these current major party candidates as sort of dream incarnations, Obama strikes me as a really good dream figure. He's got all this multiracial quality that will, you know, heal our racial divide. Symbolically, he's cool. He sounds like a sort of a Muslim name, which could heal us from this crazy battle against the Muslims and all of that. So he's a great dream figure. But in reality, when you start doing a cold, hard sort of empirical look at Obama and the people around him, people like Brzezinski, then he doesn't look so good. And then again with McCain, McCain looks bad either way you look at him. The dream figure, here's a man who was tortured for years and years, and he has survived it by pure the power of pure hate, as he says. He got through it by just becoming the incarnation of pure hatred. Now, that's not a good dream figure. That's a nightmare figure. So but I don't know. If we're going to vote in a dream, I vote for Obama. But do you think that we should be voting in a dream, or should we be taking empirical reality into account as well?
Yeah, well, I think so many of us just are touched by Obama. I mean, compared to McCain, who just, I mean, you know, to me, there's really no difference with him and Bush. But the big danger is to think, oh, that if Obama gets elected, then everything, you know, things will be better in a certain way. And in one sense, they'll be better in a superficial way. But the underlying, you know, pathology is not touched at all. And, you know, and the whole point is that for us to actually have an expansion of consciousness. And then when there are, like, you know, if you think about it in a dream, when there are, like, a sufficient number of people in a dream who actually have the recognition of the nature of their situation, i.e. that they're dreaming, then they're able to connect with each other and change the dream they're having. And that's an evolutionary impulse that's offered us by this waking dream of ours. And so that's really, you know, what's available to us. It's very easy to get, like, entranced and think, oh, if Obama gets in, then that's the solution. And, yeah, that'll make things a bit better. But it's easy to fool ourselves and think that that's really gonna do a lot more, you know, as far as healing the underlying pathology. And I just don't really see that.
So the key thing is helping people wake up to the dream.
Right, right. In the sense that, you know, one way to understand this, I mean, if you actually are in a night dream and have the recognition that of the nature of your situation that you're dreaming, and you know, if there are other of the dream characters in that night dream who are also having that realization and are, like, you know, beginning to wake up to that they're dreaming, and through the imagination to just imagine this, and if those dream characters in that night dream who are waking up, if they actually come together and contemplate what they're discovering, and what they're discovering is that the actual environment that they're in is just a reflection of their own consciousness, and that, you know, if their consciousness is conditioned like the typical person's is, based on fear and based on being separate, that the actual dream, which is just a reflection of their consciousness, is going to reflect that back and be really fearful and be really problematic. But if those people who are connecting in the dream with the realization that they're dreaming, if they have the realization, oh, well, being that this dream is just a reflection of our consciousness, when enough of us see that and connect, we can actually change the dream. And that's not New Age woo-woo. That's real stuff. That's like, that's based on quantum physics. And that's what's available to us. And that's this radical evolutionary, like, you know, possibility. And that's what I really see as, you know, that's the solution for our, that's the real solution for our, like, dilemma.
So actually, instead of running as a third-party libertarian candidate for Congress, as I'm doing, maybe I should be running as a wake-up party candidate. Pull the lever.
There you go.
And wake up and realize that you're in a dream. Now, this reminds me of that terrific Richard Linklater film, Waking Life.
Waking Life, sure, totally.
Right. If anybody out there listening to this show hasn't seen it, well, if you're listening to this show, you will like the film Waking Life. Linklater is one of our greatest directors. And in fact, he's the only one, along with David Lynch, I think, of the major directors that I can think of right now who have spoken out about 9/11 being an inside job. And it doesn't surprise me that somebody that aware of these matters that can make a film like Waking Life would also be able to wake up to 9/11, especially with the help of his friend, Alex Jones. You know, if you're a friend of Alex Jones, you make a film like Waking Life, well, of course you can figure out that 9/11 was an inside job.
Right, totally.
And in that film, that's really what it's about. Is this guy, you know, just keeps waking up, and he, oh, that was a dream, and then it turns out that what he's in now is a dream too, and he's meeting all of these other people, and presumably they're all dreaming too.
Right, and that's what any spiritual tradition that's based on wisdom is basically articulating that realization in their own way, you know, and like, you know, even quantum physics, which, you know, one way that they articulate this is they'll investigate what is the nature of the material world, what is the nature of light, and they'll find, well, is it a wave or is it a particle? And what they've concluded is that, well, it depends how we observe it, that it's a function of consciousness, that, you know, we can't even talk about this world as being objective, you know, that's in a way that's like other than the consciousness that's observing it. And we can't even talk about ourselves as being like these independent entities that are separate from the world that we're observing. So the point is, it's the way that we actually dream up our world has this, like, you know, very powerful effect on how the world manifests. So, for example, with Bush, well, is he, and in my book I go into this, is he like the incarnation of this dark force that's going to destroy our planet? Well, possibly. And or is he like this bodhisattva who's actually showing us and reflecting back to us the very pathology that's in ourselves that can wake us up? Well, how is he going to manifest? Are we going to destroy ourselves, or are we going to wake up? And it depends how we dream it.
Well, theoretically, we only have a few months left to either destroy ourselves or wake up, with Bush as being the avatar of this, the bodhisattva or the Darth
Vader
figure.
Right, but, sure. Yeah. But you know, the thing to realize is that he's just picking up this role that's in the field. So when he exits stage left, somebody else will come in, and whether it's, you know, with McCain or Obama, and the thing is, I want to point out that for me, you know, when I see Obama, I mean, he touches something in me. He just seems like such an intelligent, you know, this open-hearted person. But what concerns me is that, you know, who's funding him? And, you know, a person is not going to get in that role of potentially being president without doing the bidding of the powers that be. And I hate to say that, but that just seems to be the way that our political system has become corrupted.
Well, that's why my dream candidate is Cynthia McKinney.
Totally.
She has it all. You know, she's got this immense courage. Having somebody like that somehow win would really signal a transformation to me.
Totally.
So that's what I'm dreaming of. We'll see if that works. We need a lot more people dreaming Cynthia. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Paul Levy, standing by for David Griffin in the next hour. So stick around and feel free to call in. We're at 512-646-1984. 512-646-1984.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, and today I'm talking with Paul Levy, the author of The Madness of George W. Bush. Paul is a practicing Jungian analyst, or what are you, a counselor again? I forgot the word.
Yeah, I'm not actually certified. I just study Jung for 25 years, so I'm not a Jungian analyst, you know, as far as that I have a credential, but I'm a healer, and I actually have created these groups called Awakening in the Dream, where I bring people together who are awakening to that we're having a mass shared dream, and we're discovering how we can hang out together in a way that helps all of us to wake up. And I'm actually trying to get that out to the world. It's a real, like, an amazingly powerful vehicle for helping people to wake up to the dreamlike nature.
And this would be a good time to mention that website.
Sure. It's just www.awakeninthedream.com.
Okay. We do have a caller. It's Chris from Oklahoma. Hello, Chris. Hello, Chris. You there? Chris from Oklahoma. Going once. Going twice. All right. Well, hopefully we'll get Chris back on the line in a little bit. But yeah, speaking of these Awaken in the Dream circles that you're doing, Paul. How do people get involved with that? You're in the Bay Area, right?
No. I'm in Portland, Oregon, and So I'm up here in Portland, and and this is word of mouth. I don't really advertise, but and typically there are people in the groups for years and years. I mean, there are people for over 10 years who are in the groups, and they meet every week. And, it's totally creative. We don't have any idea what we're going to do, because how could we if this is a dream? We just enter the present moment and follow what the dream is showing us. Okay.
I wish I could join one of those.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, it's changing people's lives, and we're actually trying to get them out to the world. And a friend of mine just started one in China. But the point is with these groups is that they're what I call a microcosmic fractal. They're like symbols that have crystallized, out of the field that are actually sort of showing what's available to us as a species. Because one way of understanding it, imagine a dozen people who are snapping out of the imagination they exist separate from each other and recognizing that we're all each other's dream characters, which means we're interconnected and interdependent. And that itself is a real expansion of consciousness. And it activates the sort of the collective genius that's in all of us, like that we can't access just as an isolated entity. When we actually configure ourselves and get in phase with each other, we can really activate the collective genius in the field that's greater than the sum of its parts. And that's just like completely mind-blowing when that happens, and it happens like night after night in these groups.
Well, we have another dream character to admit on our dialogue here on the radio.
Great.
We're dreaming up Melissa from Texas. Hello, Melissa? You know what? There she is.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, hi.
Hi, Melissa.
Welcome.
So I've had, like, the last few years of my life, I've been awakened to an extent, and I've always been a little bit more of the rebellious type, where I've always had, quote-unquote intellectual type, whatever you want to call it. But I've always had, my doubts on what's going on around me and things like that. And I've noticed in the past few years where I've really just tried to become, a very truthful, I make sure to point out the obvious to people that people aren't picking up on, things like that. And I've noticed that I've lost a lot of my connection with people on average. I'm in retail. I've always been a real, a star person when it came to retail. And I've noticed it's hard to, communicate with people now. You want to talk to people about the things that you're learning, and you want to, you want to share it with everyone. It's like, you want everybody to feel just open to everything. You want to be able to share that, that quote unquote enlightenment. I don't know what you want to call it, and if you find that it's like there's a wall that's built up between you and other people, and it's really hard to open people up to even the idea of conformities in. You know what I mean? Like everybody just wants to do what they're told and be who they're told to be, and it's scary.
Sure.
How should you break through with these people? Like, how do you talk to people?
Yeah. And the thing is,
side that you can start with.
Right. The thing is, it's important to develop what's called that, to be skillful, because, if you're trying to convince anybody of something of your point of view, I mean, that just doesn't work. And, I can totally relate, because for me, when I had a spiritual awakening over 25 years ago, and it was so over the top, and just stuff began happening in my life that could only happen in dreams. And I was just in my enthusiasm, and the word entheos means to be filled with spirit. I just wanted to share it with everybody, but it was freaking people out, because I hadn't developed the skillfulness of how to actually really get it across. And so in essence, it's important maybe to just embody, to actually just embody the frequency or the vibration that you're wanting to transmit. And, and then as you build up the relationship and build up the container and maybe become fluent with the other person in a certain way, then you're more and more able to communicate to them what your experience is in a way that maybe they can receive,
Yeah. It's just like the television mind nowadays is so, family, friends, people that are close to me that I've known for years, I've lost contact with a lot of these people because they think that I'm a nut.
Right.
It's,
no, and that's
that
what happens.
It's my way, where I think that I'm trying to help them find their way, and I feel like it's almost like I'm having a bipolar reaction or like a dual personality. Like I'm fighting myself in my head all the time now, because it's like you almost start to take other people's, you know, since you have a majority of the people that you talk to that tell you that you're nutty, you start to doubt yourself. And then, you know, obviously I can sit and like get myself grounded again. And, you know, but it sometimes can be really difficult. And my family is finally starting to understand me to an extent. And I'm like, people don't understand my joyfulness all the time. And I'm very bubbly. I jump around. I have a good time. I love life. You know, everything about it is beautiful. Even when the worst is happening, just, I feel like people just, I just want to hug everyone, and they don't understand.
sure.
Especially, like, my family, to understand that, you know, that the world around them may not be what they think it is. And that
if I could just say a couple.
It isolates you.
Sure. Well, no, it can, but also, you know, that's the idea of the spiritual community. It's important to hang out with other people who speak the language and who can all stabilize each other's lucidity and realization. That's really, really important thing. And then another thing, too, it sounds like you're maybe getting a little bit entranced by what I call, like, the Halloween costume, that people can very convincingly appear like they don't get it, and, of course, you want to help them to get it. But if you're doing that, the one who's asleep is you, because from the awakened point of view, we're all these awakened, enlightened people. And if you see other people in that way, that creates a bridge and helps to invoke the awakened or the enlightened aspect of them to manifest.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Yeah,
it may not work with every dream figure you run into, but if you keep doing that, I know what you're saying, Paul. I've noticed that at times, you know, when I've been in this kind of state where I'm highly aware of these things, I can get little, you know, glimpses and glitters from the people I run into. Just by the way I'm interacting with them. Whereas in another state where I'm frustrated about not being able to get through to any of these idiots, they're acting like idiots.
Yeah. Right, totally, exactly. You know, yeah. And it's, I just want to say, it's so much like people who are supporting Bush. It's like there's an impenetrable field of consciousness that gets conjured up, like just you know, the whole, just with everybody who's following him. That it just resists self-reflection. Like, you'll try to bring in facts or evidence or try to reflect back what they're doing, and they'll integrate it in a perverse way to reinforce their madness. And it's just
like they're taking things personally. It's like it becomes this personal thing especially when you're talking about things like politics. People tend to take it as a personal jab at their choice, at what they thought was right. And now, instead of you know, maybe having a different, or you know, opening their mind like you said, you have facts that prove these things, and they're just shutting it out. Whereas they could be taking it in and then, you know, realizing and maybe changing their opinions. But it's like people want to be right instead of being, you know, honest with themselves. You know.
Well, they've got a little bit of Bush inside them, and they've caught that malignant egophrenia, and you can't cure them overnight. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Paul Levy here on We the People Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
Pure energy. We the pure energy.
We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is Kevin Barrett on Truth Jihad Radio. You're listening to some higher level truth today with Paul Levy. And we do have a lineup of callers. We're bringing in people into our dream circle, awakening into the fact that we're all characters in a collective dream, and we're all dreaming each other up and interacting on that basis. It's quite the concept, and you know, I think Paul is onto something. First caller is Chris from Oklahoma. Hello, Chris. Hello, Chris.
You okay?
Hey, yes, you're there. Welcome. Yeah, we got you finally. How's it going?
Not too bad. Great show today, as usual, Kevin. Mr. Levy, I appreciate your refreshing perspective on the case of George Bush and all of the psychology that he goes through. I remember living in Austin, mm-hmm. and when he was governor, his bizarre behavior, he went out in public. I saw him swear, like, you know, he was out at a bar party, and just very inappropriate behavior. And I thought, mm-hmm. something, this guy needs some counseling. And I didn't realize that, of course, you know, with his alcoholism problem and drug abuse, he never really got counseling for that. So mm-hmm. my question to you is, it appears that, of course, the media and all of his handlers and enablers over the years have never really addressed, they were just not even addressing the symptoms, let alone the problem. And mm-hmm. Oddly enough, he was in town yesterday in Oklahoma City for 4 hours. He flew in for a quick John McCain support trip and had about five or six different venues to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you know, the picture on the front page of the paper, everybody's just Googling over him. And I'm thinking, these people have absolutely no idea what this guy is all about, nor do mm-hmm. they understand what he's put us through over the last 8 years. And mm-hmm. He almost ran Texas in the ground if it wasn't for the people that surrounded him, because they were literally just, they were holding him up. He didn't know what he was doing down there as governor, and it mm-hmm. it went infinitely worse in spades. So I guess my question to you is, and the comment is, what can these people do? What can we help them do to break through this, the shell of fantasy, to realize that we have a very sick person at the helm, and
right. No,
things aren't going to be getting much better. So
sure,
comments off here.
Sure, that question is a really great question, because part of the edge that stops people from having the realization that the person they're supporting, like in Bush, is a psychopath, is that it will induce a form of PTSD, of post-traumatic stress disorder, because it's so shocking to have the experience of, oh my God, the person who I thought was, you know, sort of like the positive father archetypal figure who's protecting us is the very person that I need protection from. That's like very traumatic to have that realization. So for a lot of people, yeah, right, exactly. And so for a lot of people, it's just a lot easier, because they've been, in a sense, they've been hypnotized to sleep, to just become part of the herd, and they, you know, to just their power, they just give away their power, and they just hope that this person is going to take care of them. But yeah, it's, you know, and the thing is, it has to be understood from the point of view of the field that there is a collective psychosis that gets conjured up all around someone like Bush, and that if you don't view it that way, then you can't even deal with the phenomena at all, you know, because it hooks people through their unconscious, and it's all, right. It's all based on fear.
Right, right, and that's why it's best to avoid too many television images, especially of the mainstream variety, because they can't hypnotize you at that unconscious level. We do have more callers. Next is John from Germany. Hello, John. Hello. Come in, John. Come in, John. Hello.
Okay.
We're a little slow today. Yeah, there he is. Hey, John, how's it going?
Hey. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. Hey, you know, like what Bob Dylan said, he said, I'll let you in my dream if you'll let me in yours. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I can relate to what you're saying. No problem. I've been meditating for years on the nature of reality and consciousness. You know, and I came to the conclusion it's not real. None of this is real. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're born into this apparent reality, which is not really a reality. It's spooky. It goes away and it comes back. And it's very much the nature of a dream. But the thing is that we're not all in the same dream. Sometimes we share dreams. You know, I work on a concept I call each person has his own immediate reality. And
mm-hmm.
like that has a whole aura to it, you know. So and nobody really exists alone. Even though we think we're alone, we're all part of some sort of communal gestalt kind of thing, which we don't even perceive, just by the nature of where we live and what the customs are. We're in a
There's one thing I want to say about what you just said, and that is, like, the final chapter in my book, it's actually called Global Awakening. It's called Art Happening, called Global Awakening. And the point is that, yeah, when there are enough people who wake up to the dreamlike nature, we, as the dreamers of the dream, and as multidimensional artists, can put our lucidity together, channeled through the open heart, with the fuel of love and compassion, and actually change the dream we're having. And that's the evolutionary impulse that's being offered to us as participants, not as somebody who's just witnessing it or intellectually thinking about it, but we're actually getting offered to play the role of being the conduits through which this universe actually is waking itself up through us.
Well, the fact that I was getting these ideas for the last few months, and then here you are on the radio, and now I'm talking to you.
Right.
So we're.
Well, I'm your dream. I'm your dream character. You've dreamed me up. I'm this part of your mind.
Sweetheart. You know.
Exactly. It's a mutual process.
So you're the one who's responsible.
No. It's the deeper dreaming self that's dreaming all of us that's responsible.
Exactly.
And that's the true nature.
Exactly.
That's who we are, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
totally.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Maybe why, you know, why wouldn't we read Alice in Wonderland?
Totally. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going off now. See you later.
Okay. Take care, John.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, that Alice in Wonderland is far more realistic, I think, than many people realize.
Right. Sure. And the thing I just want to say, Kevin, too, is that, you know, it's clearly some sort of apocalyptic times that we're living in. And etymologically, the word apocalypse, it actually means something hidden that's being, that's being shown to us. It's an unveiling, right? And so what I'm pointing at in my whole work is that when you see from the more, like, expansive point of view of this being a dream that we're all dreaming up, you begin to see, oh, this dream, just like a night dream, it's speaking symbolically. And interesting, symbols are the word symbol is the antonym to, like, the word diabolic, you know, Diabolos, like to be diabolical, which means to separate. The word symbol means to unite. And so what that's pointing at is that the way to heal the diabolical evil in our world is to, like, actually step into symbolic awareness and to see the nature of the dream. And that's what's being shown to us. And it's so clear when you see it.
Okay. It makes sense to me. And perhaps to our next caller as well. Let's find out. Jeffrey from Kentucky. See how quickly we can get Jeffrey on the line. Hey, Jeffrey, how's it going?
Hey, I want to make a statement real quick about your female caller who just caught up. Your guest should know what I'm about to say. I do believe it was the Buddha that said that the need to be right is a mental disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think she needs to get across to her, the way she's so perky and everything, is that this isn't a crusade. This isn't a... convert type of situation that we're in. This is a revealing, so to speak, just like the word apocalypse, the unveiling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've got a quick story to tell you. Back in 2004, I was hit by a suicide bomber in Iraq. And when everything was said and done, I was sitting on the edge of a bed in Baghdad, and it came to me that, did I really die in that situation? And the more I thought about it, the more that I... started to realize that I couldn't prove one way or the other that I did or didn't. And then I started noticing, given the nature, I guess, of my head injury, that the edges of reality seemed to start unraveling. And that's when I started picking up on this type of information.
Mm.
Wow, that's wild. Because, you know, in the movie Waking Life, it appears that he may have he may be in the bardo, this post, after when you die and your soul leaves the material plane, you're kind of... still reliving these experiences and having these experiences in a slightly more jumbled way than we do in the dream of material life.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's very interesting that you would come to that realization in that way.
Right. And the thing is, so often it's with a crisis that actually precipitates, like, some sort of awakening. So that makes total sense.
I've got a question for your guest, too. Have you ever heard of a person named Michael Desarian?
Yeah. We're both colleagues and admirers of each other's work. He'll cite me a lot, and I'm always talking about him. Yeah.
I was thinking, hey, I ran into him about a year ago, and that's where I started picking up on some of this information. So.
Great.
Terrific. Well, you know, great minds think alike, and it's all connected through the dream anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks Jeffrey. It's been great. Take care. Okay, and then thank you, Paul. Now, Paul, am I pronouncing your name right? Levy is in Rent.
It's actually sort of with a hard E, like E, you know.
Levy.
Levy, okay, yeah, well, not Levy, but that's okay. I don't mind.
Okay, Paul Levy, and your website?
The website is www.awakeninthedream.com.
Okay, and we'll be awakening to that website, and thank you. It's been wonderful as always.
Oh, it's totally my pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, well, stay tuned. David Riggs.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.